Welcome to the Profit Business Cast, Canada's podcast for innovative entrepreneurs and executives. And brought to you by Bennett Gold LLP Chartered Accountants. Here is your host, Robert Gold.
For the first time, from deep within the Toronto Region Board of Trade in downtown Toronto, and not from the Business Cast Podcast Center, live and in the morning, we're way up high, I can see the CN Tower. I'm Robert Gold, Managing Partner of Bennett Gold LLP, Chartered Accountants and CPAs in Toronto.
And I'm Andrew Brown, President of Right on the Money.
And this podcast is produced in partnership with Profit Magazine and ProfitGuide.com. Today, Andrew, I am really excited. The podcast is brought to you today by CPA Canada and Great West Life. We're at the launch event of CPA Canada's new book, Business Insights, which you can find at cpacanada.ca/biz with a Z, Biz Insights. That's cpacanada.ca/biz insights. And guess what? Andrew and I are the authors because the book is based on our popular Business Cast podcast, Canada's number one podcast for business owners, managers, and entrepreneurs. Our guests today are all featured in this amazing book. And for this launch event, we've created a special Voice of Entrepreneurs for Entrepreneurs panel. And these panelists have an awful lot of gems to share with us. First, Claudia is with us. Claudia Harvey is the co-founder of Digit Apparel, a very popular speaker. In fact, we're lucky to have her available. And she's also a strategy consultant. We're also joined by Phil Hogg, President, Association of Strategic Alliance Professionals in Toronto. And Phil is also the Vice President, Partner Channels at Pivotal Payments. And Derek Zito is here. Derek is one of my favorite guests. He's been a guest on the podcast before. He's a real serial entrepreneur. He's now the CEO at Wirkn, W-I-R-K-N. It sounds like that radio show, doesn't it? W-I-R-K-N. And he's the entrepreneur in residence at Kinetic Cafe. Derek recently sold his previous venture, redflagdeals.com, to Yellow Pages Group, and he's got things to share. Claudia, Phil, Derek, welcome to the Profit Business Cast and to the launch event for Business Insights.
The reason why we're here today is not only to talk about the challenges facing entrepreneurs and to launch this exciting new book, but to really focus on the topic of growth. As co-hosts of the Business Cast, because we've interviewed hundreds, literally thousands of entrepreneurs, we've discovered that growth means different things to different people. It can mean top-line growth. It can mean profitability. It can be more innovation. It can mean higher stature in your industry. It can mean going to market faster. So why we're excited today is because all of our panelists are going to be talking about growth from a very unique perspective, and we're going to really hone in on a number of aspects of growth. Phil Hogg, who is the president of the Association of Strategic Alliance Professionals, will help us understand growth by building better partnerships. Claudia will help us understand how growth comes about by increasing capacity and expertise in marketing. And Derek Zito will help us understand growth by taking a look at product innovation and building product innovation processes. So all our guests bring something unique to the table, literally as well as physically. So why don't we actually get underway by asking for each person to spend about 2 or 3 minutes and tell us from that lens about growth. So I'm going to turn to Phil first. Phil, perhaps you can give us 3 minutes on how growth happens because of well-structured partnerships.
Thank you very much, and thank you to Robert and Andrew for the invitation. As most of the folks know in this particular audience, especially given the fact you're CPAs, fundamentally there's only 3 ways in which a business can grow. The vernacular that we use within partner management is build, buy, or ally. So essentially, the build strategy is really organic growth, and that's where you're going to effectively invest more in people, technology, as well as procure other resources, if you will. Secondly, is the buy strategy through merger and acquisition, which we would know about dearly. The third strategy, of course, is through partnership and alliances. And all three of those particular components in terms of growing do have their own advantages and disadvantages. In particular, when you take a look at the build strategy, the benefit is the fact that you maintain control over everything within your organization. You also ensure that the intellectual property is still yours. The challenge with the build strategy, however, is it typically is a longer-term market strategy. It takes a while to get that investment running, to procure the products and the like. In terms of the acquisition strategy, again, the same idea. There's great benefits in that you know exactly what you're buying and you know what you're bringing into your company. But again, it's high acquisition costs. Not only that, but you've got the complexity associated, quite frankly, with that acquisition, which could be large. Finally, when we take a look at the ally strategy or alliance and partnership, significant benefits associated with an alliance or a partnership strategy is effectively the quickest line to market as opposed to the build or the buy strategy. You're also sharing resources with somebody else. And quite frankly, you're sharing risk. So while you may be sharing some revenue, key element is you're sharing risk, which is of significant benefit. The alliance or partner strategy as well can be akin to almost a borrowing strategy. If you think of it, you're really borrowing, in some cases, somebody's capital. You're borrowing somebody's intellectual property. You could be borrowing their talent, their resources. And also, quite frankly, you're going to be borrowing their baggage. Because when you start working in alliance fashion, your partner will certainly let you know what they've tried in the past, what's been successful and what hasn't been successful. So you will learn from, again, their baggage and their dirty laundry to a certain extent. And finally, I look at alliance and partner management as really a gap fulfillment strategy. You might have, for example, some of the best software developers in Kitchener-Waterloo. However, if they don't know how to distribute that particular product, it's really all for naught. So what alliances and partnerships do is they effectively fill that gap. And that gap could be something what we might consider easy to do depending upon your talents, but it could be a marketing alliance. It could be a sales alliance, distribution alliance. It could be a product development alliance. And also it could be an R&D alliance. So again, when you take a look at those particular factors, the potential for growth and utilizing on the build, buy, or ally strategy to go towards the alliance side is real, it's less costly, and again, it's more efficient in terms of taking to market.
Thank you, Phil. Derek, perhaps from your perspective, you can help us understand how growth is achieved by honing your product innovation and product innovation processes.
This really falls into Phil's bucket of build, and this is what people think about when they go out and iterate, build a product, learn from customers, and then make it better so that it's a bit more viral and organic in nature. So even for my previous business, redflagdeals.com, we had about 2.5, 3.5 million unique visitors. In the end, the referral source that was the most popular by far was still organic search, and it was word of mouth. It was people telling other people about that product or service, and that's really, really powerful. To be able to get there, though, you have to try to hone this product to be something people feel comfortable sharing about, and that's certainly not where we started when you initially launch a site, a product, whatever it might be. It's probably far from what you want it to be, far from the overall vision. It's the process of how you get there that becomes important, and understanding how you can get the right feedback and filtering that out, and then putting it back out there so that you can test it. So in this day and age, there's actually a lot more tools. There's a lot more information that's available. Products that are digital, you can tie in all sorts of crazy analytics. And in most cases, it's fairly reasonably priced to be able to do so. So it becomes a cycle of planning, experimenting, looking at the results, and then reiterating. The question is, how quickly can you do that? And can you do that quicker than your competitors? So you get to the point where you have the product that is the best fit for your target audience. And that's the other piece of it. There's sort of two ways to approach it. You can build a product that everybody loves, which is unusual and unlikely to be the case out of the gate. Or you can build the product that a small group of really dedicated users love, and then you can sort of expand from there. And that's typically the right route, especially for smaller enterprises that are trying to find their way and get up and running, is to focus on a smaller core audience, figure out what they want, learn from them, and then you can sort of expand and grow into similar areas. For Red Flag Deals, that meant focusing on Canadians who are interested in retail shopping online, computers, electronics, DVDs, that type of thing, and media. And then over time, we grew to covering everything from fashion to travel and everything in between as we brought on more editors, more traffic, more knowledge. And then what can you do to also align, hopefully, with something that you're passionate about? Because if you're passionate about it, you're going to spend that much more time, energy, and you're going to be that much better than the next guy who's sort of just doing it for business means.
Excellent. Thank you, Derek. Claudia, can you share with us how companies grow by building manufacturing capacity and expertise?
Thank you very much for the opportunity of being here today, and thank you all for being here as well early this morning. To give a little bit of background, the company that I started 6 years ago with my business partner, we created a manicure protective gardening glove for ladies. So we were filling a niche in the garden industry and the nail industry that were both growing at the same time. So we created a garden protective glove to make sure that manicures are protected. So we filled this niche that women specifically needed that wasn't out there. And I see a lot of women nodding their heads, which is awesome. So we started in our infancy. We outsourced to a Canadian manufacturing company who in turn outsourced to an overseas manufacturer. We had no control, basically, on the manufacturing process. We just relied on them to give us a good product. So they provided us samples. We okayed the samples. Took us a year to develop the prototypes and the samples. We wanted to do it right because we wanted to have a proper product to go out to the marketplace to fill that niche that women wanted in the marketplace. Going to the outsourced manufacturer, we relied on their technology and their connections than to go overseas to find the product and create the product for us. What we found is that the control is not there if you're outsourcing to an outsourcer. And then that outsourcer outsources itself to another provider. So we eventually bypassed that whole arrangement, and we've now gone direct to source to manufacture and chosen a factory overseas directly. And we visit that factory to make sure that our product is met with timeliness and quality and control with proper pricing. And that's the way to grow organically with a company with a product. You have to take control of your manufacturing process as much as you possibly can and partner with the right strategies and the right people to meet your needs.
Thank you, Claudia. I want to go back to Derek for a second, because Derek is well known for one of his other entities, which is a company called Dossia, Dossia.com. And Dossia became somewhat famous because of their approach to how they grew, and that was by becoming a lean startup. Now, we've all heard about lean startups, and Andrew and I, when we created the book and interviewed as many people as we have and brought them the 20 that are in the book to the terrific summaries of their stories and their issues, lean kept coming up. And of all the entrepreneurs we talked to, Derek summarized it the best. What does a lean startup mean? So, Derek, I'm going to throw it back to you. Let's just talk for a second. What does lean startup really mean to someone who, in fact, has done it?
Sure. Similar to what we talked about, it's really about being close to a customer and listening to what they need. And lean startup is a very common phrase now, and you can actually execute on building a lean, low overhead business typically, especially if you're looking at web-based and digital-based products. So what does that ultimately mean? It means starting really at the point of trying to understand your customer and then iterating and experimenting and then updating your product so it's something that fits them. For Dossia, what we were trying to do is we're trying to help people understand the context and the information that they need to go into a meeting and to be able to understand their background and commonalities, that type of thing, to make it more of a warm discussion. And for us, we went out and interviewed customers before we built a single thing. So that's probably something that you hear a lot about, is you don't want to overcommit resources from a development or product perspective until you know what you need to build and what problem you're trying to solve. And these are questions that you need to constantly ask yourself, and then you need to take that back, build something, test it with them, ask them questions, and then iterate and update and go back out to the market. And the idea is that over time, as you work through these cycles, and that might be 5, that could be 10 cycles, you really don't know. I mean, you get to the point where you build a product that they love and that they're sort of dying to pay you for without you even having to ask them to do so. It's that good. It's that great. And so for me, I'm happy to share sort of my experience. And the case of Dossia, we didn't get to the point of enough traction. We got to a product where people liked it, people were using it, and there was engagement. But the question also became for us the next step of how do we commercialize that? And we were commercializing it in a way that was maybe a bit more conservative relative to some of the competitors out there. We've iterated, but we had fewer resources. So there was guys out there that actually raised in our space $10 million just to pursue the idea and to pitch it out there and to iterate faster than us. So this is what sometimes you're up against. And then the question is, how do you find something that you can provide that's unique to a particular audience so that you can ultimately stand out? Because there will always be people who have more resources than you. And if you can get closer to the customer to be able to fill their need better, you can compete in this sort of day and age, especially in the world where it's digital, it's online, it's international, and these international barriers don't really exist.
The key there is iteration, of course. And of all the entrepreneurs we spoke to, iteration seems to mean do it again, and then do it right, and speak to your audience. Let's start digging a little deeper. Andrew and I love to provoke the challenges, bring the challenges out. So, Claudia, let's start with you. The two biggest challenges that you face when you start building your manufacturing expertise and capacity.
Timing and pricing certainly go hand in hand. If you're trying to find your manufacturing overseas or even locally, you have to make sure that you have enough inventory in stock. stock to meet the demand in the marketplace. So the forecasting is absolutely crucial to do that. So you want to make sure that your manufacturing partner can meet your demands, forecasting appropriately. You're having the upfront cash to buy your product up front, warehousing it, and it's this whole huge cash cycle as a small business that's really, really, really hard to maintain. So you can try to go a lot faster in the manufacturing, but then the quality is perhaps compromised, which is what we found. So finding a manufacturing partner that can meet the quality that you absolutely demand in the marketplace with the type of price that you can actually go to the marketplace with and work from what the suggested retail price is to what your margins are going to be to what your cost of goods are going to be and move that cycle backwards to actually be able to make a profit as a company and to put that profit back into your company to then invest again in the inventory is absolutely crucial in order to be able to build the business. And that whole entire cycle is a lot to learn when you're doing a first startup and trying to figure out exactly how to do the timing, the quality, and the pricing, and how to find a manufacturing partner to do that and to manage that whole process again and again and again.
So, Phil, you mentioned earlier one of the challenges when you work with other partners are their laundry comes out, and sometimes you're stuck with their laundry. But outside of a partner's laundry, what are the other challenges that you think we could run into working with great partners?
Sure. I think first is selecting the right partner, because when you take a look at your various options, typically you're trying to look for a fit. And that fit usually has three components. One is you want to select a partner that has a good strategic fit associated with where your business is and where it's going. Secondly, you want to make sure that you have a partner that has a good operational fit. It's nice that you have both strategies aligned, but if operationally you just cannot focus and integrate, again, that's all for naught. And thirdly, you want a partner who quite frankly has chemistry or a cultural fit with you as well. There might be challenges if, for example, you're getting, say, 20-year-olds who might be in software working with folks who have been in corporate life for, you know, 50 years. It might be a bit of a challenge. You have to make sure that you do have a cultural fit. I think secondly, however, and probably more importantly, is just to ensure that one has become educated within alliance management and strategic alliance management. Particularly, about 70% of all strategic alliances fail within the first 3 years of formation. And typically, they fail because the folks who are putting them together really don't have any form of basis or best practices, if you will, in alliance management. And what we've realized at ASAP, or the Association of Strategic Alliance Professionals, is those folks who are educated in alliance management, the number reverses. So 70% are successful after 3 years. Because in our particular business, especially if you're looking at a sales or a marketing type alliance, in some cases you might have a VP of business development who meets with another VP of business development with another company. You know, they might meet over a beer and say, geez, shouldn't we get together and form a partnership? All of a sudden, they sign on the dotted line and then they say, now what do we do? And quite frankly, they have no clue what to do. And thus, it's easy to understand why a partnership can fail. So really, education on best practices is the key.
So Derek, over to you. You've launched a number of companies. Working is brand new. I know you've run into a number of challenges and you've honed products and services. What are the challenges that you've faced?
You're going to face challenges no matter what business you're going into. So some of the biggest challenges that we face, especially for the businesses I've built, are a lot of marketplace businesses. So it's community oriented. It's usually two-sided, right? So there's always this question about how do you get the chicken and egg moving. So for Red Flag Deals, that meant how do I get eyeballs and users before I can go to advertisers and merchants to participate in our ecosystem to give our users offers and so forth. And then for Workin, which is the new project that I'm working on now, it's really about how do we get store managers, employers on the one side, and then on the other side, how do we get candidates in the system? And this is your traditional classic marketplace problem. And once you sort of achieve the level of liquidity that you need, then you have a business. But up until that point, that is the key problem. And what do we do typically to try to attack that is you try to load one side or the other initially. So with Workin, we're partnering with an international retailer with 1,500, 2,000 stores that's going to seed the employer base. And then we need to go out and find candidates to go and fill the funnel. So usually spend more time working on one side or the other. One side typically becomes easier to manage than the other. And then how do you find all the different tactics that you can use to go and test to be able to go and figure out what's the most efficient way to onboard clients. So what ends up happening is you might select 10 channels, you might set a budget to attack 10 different marketing channels, and you want to go and track the effectiveness. So it comes down to conversion rates and it comes down to data. So when you're planning this sort of lean startup process and when you're trying to figure out where to spend your money, you really need to make sure you have data and the analytics and the tracking in place. Otherwise, you won't be able to make decisions. And then you need to be able to try to compare apples and apples, oranges and oranges. There's always this question about, one, what are the metrics that you want to fulfill? So user signups, for instance, is very common. And then second, this question about quality, because you can get a lot of users to sign up in a whole bunch of different ways, whether it be contesting, whether it's paid search, but the quality of the users might not be what you want. So you always need to measure both the quantity and you need to measure the quality of these users, and then you need to reinvest in those right channels.
I want to throw a question to you, Andrew, because you're the metrics guy on the podcast, and you bring up the metrics question over and over again. Why are metrics important, and what would you say are the metrics we need to understand when it comes to growth?
I think it goes back to the beginning. First, it's a matter of identifying what growth means to an organization. And at different stages of an organization, growth will take on different formats. So in an earlier entrepreneurial stage, sometimes it's just a matter of getting enough cash flow so that you can pay the bills. And as you continue to evolve, it may mean greater market penetration. So I would start with the goal first, identify what you think success is, and then to be very practical. And I've seen a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with trying to come up with very idealistic sets of metrics, and they move towards that, and at the end of the day, it's going to keep the business running. So I would actually say spend time identifying what that goal is and then identify key performance indicators. One analogy that I like to use is, if you want to lose weight, don't necessarily always look at the scale. That could be a metric, but a key performance indicator may be, am I going out for walks on a regular basis, or am I eating smaller portions? Those kinds of things help you achieve the metrics at the end of the day, but if you just keep on every day getting on the scale, that can be very misleading.
And I want to throw out one simple metric as well, and that is, you can't manage what you can't measure. And this is where the CAs and CPAs come in. Speak to your accountant, speak to your advisors, figure out what you need to measure, because once you measure it, then you can manage it. Without having these indicators, as Andrew said, having steps and milestones along the way, you can't manage if you can't measure. That's the end of part one of our Entrepreneur Extravaganza, the voice of entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs, an unbelievable entrepreneur roundtable. Come back again for the next episode of the Profit Business Cast, where we'll continue on with these fantastic guests. We're going to talk about the surprises that really challenge them. We're going to learn the lessons that they can share with us and a lot more. We'll see you on the next episode. You've been listening to the Profit Business Cast, Canada's business podcast, and brought to you by Bennett Gold LLP, Chartered Accountants. From acceleration to succession, strategy to tax planning, there's a lot more through the door at bennettgold.ca.